19 in Norwich and 20 in Manchester. For northern Scotland, the rest of tonight brings outbreaks of rain, some of that rain turning heavy, lows of 10 or 11 degrees. And then Saturday will be a mostly cloudy day with some rain at times. Again, some of it could be heavy, highs of 15 degrees. And then for Sunday, the rain eases away from northern Scotland, the showers ease away from the south, and most places will be left bright and breezy.
Ben, thank you very much. Now on Radio 4, Pik Sen Lim continues reading from Yung Chang's new biography, Empress Dowager Cixi, the concubine who launched modern China. After surviving an assassination attempt by the supporters of the political agitator Wild Fox Kang, Cixi was able to strengthen her grip on power. But her leadership was about to be sorely tested. The build-up of strong anti-Western feeling in the countryside could no longer be ignored.
In spring 1899, German soldiers burnt down hundreds of houses and shot dead a number of villagers in Shandong, a region famous for the male population's fondness for martial arts, particularly a kind of fist fighting similar to boxing. In the wake of these atrocities, a group known as the Society of the Righteous and Harmonious Fists, the Ye He Chuan, gained immense popularity and acquired hundreds of thousands of followers. They were dubbed the Boxers by the foreign press. On the 30th of December 1899, the Reverend S. M. Brooks, a missionary of the Church of England, was murdered by a group of marauders who admired the Boxers. An edict from Cixi declared that she was most deeply aggrieved. She endorsed the use of force to suppress the Boxers and banned the organisation in the two provinces where they were active, but cautioned that the aim must be to disband the gangs, punishing only those who had actually committed crimes. She did not want to be seen by the population to be heavy-handedly suppressing anti-Western sentiment and hated to be taken for a puppet of the foreign powers. On the 12th of April, the foreign legations gave the Chinese government 2 months to exterminate the Boxers. Otherwise, they threatened, their forces would enter China to do the jobs themselves. This threat was backed up by an emphatic parade of gunboats outside the Dagu forts. Not wishing a confrontation, Cixi made concessions. On the 17th, a decree condemned those who make a pretext to oppress converts and involve themselves in crime. The decree did not mention the Boxers by name, and the tone was firm without being draconian. The lack of desired severity in the decree left the legations far from satisfied. The gunboats remained outside the Dagu forts. Cixi, incensed, became more determined to defy the powers. But if her challenge did lead to a war, how and with what could she fight? The navy had been destroyed and the army was weak. It was at this time, in desperation, that Cixi clutched at a straw. Perhaps the Boxers would be able to fight a sort of people's war against the invaders. The Boxers' hatred for foreigners would make them fierce and courageous soldiers, she thought. Pragmatic men around Cixi saw that a collision with the West was imminent and counselled accommodation with the legations in order to avoid it. Cixi turned a deaf ear. The man who had her ear now, Prince Duan, vehemently promoted the idea of using the Boxers as soldiers. Cixi's rational side told her that the Boxers were not remotely suited to such a conflict, but her emotional side desperately wanted to believe otherwise. They were her last resort. She may also have calculated that the Boxers could at least inflict some damage on the invaders, which could give her a chance to negotiate a compromise and so avoid a wholesale capitulation. In May 1900, the Boxers, mostly peasants hit hard by a devastating spring drought, entered Beijing and crowded the capital streets in their many tens of thousands. They wore red, head kerchiefs, red shirts with a red sash around the waist, and they wielded large carving knives. Moving in gangs, they set up shrines worshipping a variety of deities, very often characters from popular theatre like the Monkey King. The Boxers claimed that the god of rain was not answering their prayers because he was bewitched by the foreign devils. There was a widely believed rumour that the foreigner's blue eyes could see through the surface of the earth and spot underground treasures, which they proceeded to steal, leaving China poverty-stricken. On the walls in the Beijing streets, right next to the imperial edicts banning them, the Boxers' own eye-catching posters were defiantly displayed, calling for the killing of all foreigners in 3 months. On the 31st of May, as the situation was running out of control, Sze Shi gave permission for 400 Western troops to enter Beijing to protect the foreign legations. The legations did not feel this was sufficient, so on the 10th of June, over 2,000 troops set off for Beijing from Tianjin, 75 miles away, by railway. Determined to halt a foreign army entering the capital unauthorized, Sze Shi endorsed the mobilization of some Boxers along the railway line. The Boxers proved surprisingly effective. They thoroughly sabotaged the line and fought with the utmost courage. Soon joined by the Imperial Army with modern weapons, they managed to hold back the expedition. This success raised Sze Shi's hope that the Boxers could indeed help repel invasion. The Boxers began to destroy railways, trains and telegraph lines. In Beijing, they started to burn churches and foreign properties, cheered by large crowds. Hatred overflowed. Frenzied men, girt with red sashes and armed with swords, spears and knives, crowded outside the legation quarter and laid siege to it. Sze Shi sent troops to protect the quarter. She issued many decrees intended to rein in the Boxers and dispatch grandees whom the Boxers seemed to trust to try to talk them into disbanding and returning to their villages. But then, events overtook all these efforts as she learned that scores of Western warships were gathering on the coast and many more thousands of troops were on their way. Invasion seemed inevitable. Going to war meant gambling the survival of the dynasty. So she felt the need to be endorsed, and she convened an unusually large meeting of grand councillors and ministers of the government. Prince Duan led a chorus of heated voices calling for the Boxers to be given legitimate status and used as a fighting force. That night, a joint force of 8 countries, Russia, Japan, Britain, France, Germany, America, Italy and Austria-Hungary attacked the Dagu forts that guarded the sea entry to Tianjin and Beijing. After a fierce 6-hour battle, the forts fell. To Sze Shi, the fall of the forts was associated with an enduring heartache. 4 decades earlier, they had been seized by another allied Anglo-French army, which had led to her fleeing with her husband, who died a bitter death outside the Great Wall. At the fall of the forts this time, nothing could stop her from fighting it out. On the 21st of June, Sze Shi declared war on all 8 invading countries. The Boxers were given legal status and organized under the command of princes who were sympathetic to them. In the capital, they numbered 250,000, with Prince Duan in overall charge. As they became crucial to the war effort, the Boxers ran wild. Mobs looted and pillaged cities and ransacked people's homes. So she felt like a paper tiger. She told the viceroys who opposed her handling of events, "The capital would be plunged into unthinkable peril if I tried to use the army to put them down. I have to go along with them, to be treated as their leader, and manage to control them and salvage the situation somehow. The siege of the legation quarter lasted 55 days. 68 Westerners were killed and 159 wounded. The number of Chinese Christians killed or wounded was not counted. The Boxers, who charged with practically bare hands, suffered thousands of casualties. On the early morning of the 15th of August, while the Allies were pounding at the gates of the Forbidden City itself, Shi Xi fled in a mule cart to the west, into the interior, taking with her Emperor Guangxu and a small number of his family and court. In front of her lay a wasteland of smouldering villages and towns, pillaged by the Boxers and by the shattered Imperial Army. But even in flight, and in a sorry state, she showed that she was still the supreme leader. Eyewitnesses seeing her climbing onto the mule cart said that she did so as if it were the imperial throne. That she was still alive and very much in command stopped in their tracks those who had thought of jumping ship. The unequivocal support now offered Shi Xi by the viceroys dashed Westerners' hopes of pursuing and toppling her. It was all too clear that Shi Xi was the only person who could hold the empire together. Throughout her exile, Shi Xi had been reflecting on past events. She saw that her policies had led to war and atrocities. Early in the new year, she issued a decree which she called the Decree of Self-Reproach, Zhizhi Xiezhao. In it, she said that she had been ruminating on past events and felt pierced by emotions of shame and outrage at the wrongs that had been done. She condemned the cruel and ignorant mob which had attacked Christian missions and the legations and expressed her gratitude that the Allies did not conduct tit-for-tat retribution and that they did not infringe our sovereignty nor carve away our land. Mostly, she reflected on the damage she had done. The dynasty has been brought to the precipice. The spirits of our ancestors have been devastated, and the capital has been ravaged. What position am I in to reproach others when I cannot reproach myself enough? It was with contrition that she vowed to change. On the 29th of January 1901, she issued a decree that signalled the start of a new phase of her reign. Its essence consisted in what might be learnt from the West. The Empress Dowager enjoins her people that only by adopting what is superior about the foreign countries can we rectify what is wanting in China. Similar sentiments had been expressed in the past, but on the agenda for change this time were all the fundamentals that have made the foreign countries rich and strong, encompassing dynastic rule, national traditions, governing methods, people's livelihood, educational systems, the military and financial affairs. She announced, "Making these changes is a matter of life or death for our country, and it gives our people the chance to live a better life. The Emperor and I are determined to make the changes for the sake of our dynasty and for the sake of our people. There is no other way." Western governments recognized Shi Xi as the indisputable leader. They resolved to cooperate with her. Buoyed up by support and with a new firmness of purpose, Shi Xi embarked on a course of such massive and profound change in the following years that it deserves to be described as the real revolution of modern China.
Pixen Lim was reading from Empress Dowager Shi Xi, The Concubine Who Launched Modern China by Yung Chang. The book was abridged by Sarah Davis and produced by Gemma Jenkins. And for exclusive content on this week's Book of the Week, including an interview with the author, Yung Chang, you can go to the BBC Radio 4 website. Thank you.